Our next talk is Evaluation of St. Augustine Grass, Stenotaphrum secundatum, Germplasm for Gray Leaf Spot Resistance. Authors are Susanna Miller-Lewis, Bangiama, Consuelo Arellano, Carolina Zuleta, Casey Rollins, and Lane Treadway, North Carolina State University. Presenting Carolina Zuleta.
Thank you, Dr. Shandra, for the introduction. I'm Carolina Zuleta, a member of the Turf Grass Breeding and Genetics Program at NC State University. And today I'm presenting our project on the evaluation of St. Augustine grass germplasm for gray leaf spot resistance. This is a project in collaboration between the programs of crop science, plant pathology, and statistics. St. Augustine grass is a warm season grass widely distributed in the tropical and subtropical regions. It is the most shade tolerant, and in the United States, it is considered one of the a grass with low input, and also it presents wide adaptation to different soils, including humid and sandy environments. However, there are some problems. One of them is its poor performance during the winter, limited in distribution to the southern regions. Also, it is very susceptible to different diseases, making it a perfect target during our hot and humid summers. Another point that I have to mention is that in St. Augustine, morphological and adaptation characteristics are being associated with differences in chromosome content. This fact and the incompatibility between plants of different ploidy levels has limited the transference of good agronomic traits between plants of different ploidy levels. But today I'll concentrate on gray leaf spot. Gray leaf spot is a fungal disease caused by Manaport oryzae. Symptoms include the development of brown spots with a characteristic gray center. In severe cases, the lesions can cover the entire leaf blade, which makes it very difficult the application of any management practice. However, we think that by developing cultivars with genetic resistance to the fungus, the effect of the disease in the field can be reduced. Although the disease in St. Augustine was first reported back in 1957, to date we don't have that many reports on the evaluation of resistance for gray leaf spot in different genotypes. However, the ones that we found are concentrated in the study of polyploid genotypes and breeding lengths, which are not available for the public in general, but the results confirm that the major levels of resistance are observed among the polyploid genotypes. And as I mentioned before, the incompatibility between plants of different ploidy levels makes very difficult the breeding process for this plant. Also, a study where the first interploid population was developed helped to reduce this barrier, but the method used, which is the in vitro embryo rescue, can be very time-consuming and sometimes not very effective. Another study included the evaluation of different screening methods in the field and under control conditions. Those methods, that evaluations revealed that the results are equally valid on either situation. And that's why, in 2010, we started a project to screen the St. Augustine germplasm for response to Manaport oryzae and their environmental control conditions. First, we wanted to look at plants at different ploidy levels, the polyploids and diploids, and identify sources of resistance. Then, we wanted to compare those levels of resistance between both groups. Our ultimate goal is to make use of those sources of resistance in the development of new breeding populations. In our study, we included 62 genotypes, being them 21 cultivars, 20 plant introductions, and 21 accessions belonging to the NC State germplasm collection. We started the propagation from planting three individual echelons and maintaining them until they reach 100% coverage per pot planted. The day before the inoculation, We counted the total number of leaves per pot. And just as I want to tell you, in every test, we have a total of 300 cups. And as a final step, we increased the relative humidity by using humidifiers inside of the grow chamber and by covering the plants with plastic lids. In the date of the inoculation, we prepared conidial suspensions from three different inoculant sources and spread them uniformly, and as you can see, we use an airbrush in the process. After that, we kept the relative humidity high and turned off the lights for a period of 24 hours. After this period, we turned the lights on and kept a uniform temperature and a photo period of 12 hours until the end of the study. Daily measurements included disease incubation, disease incidence, number of leaves with lesions, and mean lesion length taken from 10 different lesions per cup. The statistical experimental design that we use is a split plot with three reps. We assign the main factor for the inoculant sources and the subplot factor for the genotypes. And as we have 62 genotypes, we had space limitations, we had to divide the 62 genotypes into sets, meaning that we planted the first set, inoculate and evaluate those plants, and then we spread them twice with fungicide and gave them enough time to recover before inoculating them for a second time. We repeated this operation with the second set, and after those two sets were ready, we selected the best and worst performers of each set and prepared a third set where we wanted to compare the response observed in the two previous sets. We evaluated six different traits for these plants, including incubation period, final disease incidence, final mean lesion length, area under disease progress curve, and area under lesion expansion curve. As we generated a lot of data in this project, it was very difficult just to select to present every single trait here today. But after more discussion, we decided that the area under lesion expansion curve could give a good representation of the behavior of our project. We performed ANOVA to evaluate the significance of the main effects and their interaction. The results of our first trial. In our first trial, we included 31 genotypes, and those were polyploid plant introductions and also polyploid and diploid cultivars. And just as expected and reported in previous studies, we found that the major levels of resistance were observed among the polyploid genotypes and the higher levels of susceptibility among the diploid genotypes. This test helped us to confirm that the inoculation method that we were using is very consistent and that we can apply this technique in the evaluation of more genotypes. Also, as you can see in the pictures, the difference in response in between a susceptible plant and a resistant plant is very obvious. And also, in the ANOVA reported that we obtained higher levels of significance for the genotype source, but not for the inoculant or the interaction between the inoculant and the genotype. Next, in our second trial, we evaluated just diploid genotypes. And contrary to the first one, we observed higher levels of infection in this trial, which is expected, since we know that the susceptibility is localized in the diploid population. Also, we observed that for the first time, some plant introductions, diploid plant introductions, behave in the same, were more resistant or were comparable to other diploid genotypes. This is good news for us, because if we can get to use those plants in the development of new populations, we won't be needing to use any embryo rescue technique, and in this way we can accelerate the releasing process. And once more, you can see the difference in response between a susceptible and a resistant plant. In the LaNova reported for this specific trial, higher levels of significance for the genotype and for the interaction between the genotype and the inoculant source, but not for the inoculant source itself. Finally, in our third trial, we make a selection of best and worst performers from the two previous trials. And in the, as I mentioned before, for this trial, we wanted to compare the levels of resistance between the genotypes evaluated in the two previous trials. In this case, we observe that the susceptibility was concentrated among the deployed genotypes, just as before. But in this case, we also observe that our best deployed plant introductions were behaving in a comparable way to our most resistant polyploids, meaning confirming that we could be using those genotypes in the development of new breeding populations. Also, the ANOVA reported that a higher level of significance for the genotype, but not for the inoculant or the interaction between the inoculant and the genotype. As I mentioned before, in this project, we evaluated a total of 62 genotypes using three different inoculant sources, for, evaluating six traits, and in a total, we had six runs. We generated a lot of data. And in this table, I want to show you how uniform those results were for each individual trait evaluated in our project. Here, I'm showing them our most resistant polyploids. And in this case, we observed that they were always at the top five for each individual trait evaluated in this project. And also, we observed, we confirmed the stability of our diploid, most resistant diploid, because it behaved always at the top five position for five of the six traits evaluated. Based on all the data that we obtained in this project, we could conclude that the screening method that we use is allowed the uniform screening of different genotypes, and that at this screening allowed the identification of resistant sources. Also, that the levels of resistance that we observed were comparable between the most resistant diploids and the most resistant polyploids. And finally, based on all this work, we can say that we are going to use those sources of resistance in the development of new breeding populations. Thank you, and I'll be able to answer any questions. Yes.
Is your most gray leaf spot resistant to diploid also culvert? Is it culvert?
Excuse me, the last word?
Cold hardy.
Cold tolerant? This is an African polyploid, and I'm not expecting it to be the most cold tolerant, but we are on our way to develop to make the two traits by using a Raleigh St. Augustine, which is the most cold tolerance between the among Raleigh genotypes.
Among the PI, the kind of introduction materials, they give information on a 40 level, or do you have to check the chromosomes yourself?
Initially, we didn't have any information about not that much information about the ploidy level, but we started a project where we use flow cytometry to compare those ploidy levels, and also we are currently working in chromosome content.
So how do you plan to use the hexploid plants in the breeding world?
We are not planning to use the hexaploid plants in the breeding program. We are just concentrating right now in the two diploids that we identified.
Yeah, my question is how?
Just crossing them, because they are diploid, they don't need to any embryo rescue or chromosome duplication or anything like that to develop new populations.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.